We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
America's largest all-sports radio station presents the number one motorsports show for over two decades, Track Talk, brought to you by Rod and Supply and the Power Eye Midwest Lightning Sprints. Here are the racing boys, Scott Traylor and Kirk Elliott.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Track Talk here. It's all brought to you by Rod and Supply, featuring the Power Eye Midwest Lightning Sprints. And we can't thank you enough for joining the show. We've got a really good show lined up for you today, folks. We've got Ben Shelton, Chase Rodman, Trenton Barry, and Jeremy Elliott, a guy from the East Coast that has the pulse on sprint car racing out there on the East Coast, doesn't he, Kirk?
Especially Pennsylvania,
yeah,
where he's
PA.
Based out of. He's been around a long time. Pretty well plugged in to not only sprint car racing in that part of the world, but all over the country, too. And we'll get his thoughts about some big news in sprint car racing this past week.
The big news is that High Limit Sprint Car Series acquires the All-Stars. What do you think about that, Kirk? Let's just start off the show talking about that for a second.
Well, it's a this is not a surprising bit of news that we heard this week. This has been in the rumor mill for some months now,
right?
But I think it's big. I think it previews what is more big news yet to come in the world of Wing 410 sprint car racing. A little bit uncertain right now,
Kirk. This brings up the question to many people that are big sprint car fans. Does the High Limit Series take on the world of outlaws? Your opinion?
I think eventually, yes.
I do too.
Will it happen overnight? No. Because I think there are a lot of challenges to what Brad Sweet and Kyle Larson are attempting to do here with the High Limit Series. When they first announced the High Limit Series a year ago, they said, we're not going to go compete against the world of outlaws. We're going to develop a midweek series that'll pay lots of money, and we're going to help sprint car racing. We don't want to take anything away from the world of outlaws. That's what they said. So they develop a series of about a dozen midweek shows. One of them was at Lakeside Speedway, paid $50,000 to win back in April. And they had a big series that Kyle Larson ended up winning the championship of his own series. Brad Sweet did not run a lot of those races because the World of Outlaws had a restriction on how many races
they could
their
run.
Platinum members, the touring members that they give tow money to, could participate in. They could participate in up to four outside events from the World of Outlaws. So
right.
Brad Sweet didn't run all those races.
So just to be clear, the All-Stars have been around longer than the World of Outlaws. Is that correct?
They have been.
Since 1970.
Right, but the difference is the All-Stars is not a national coast-to-coast touring series like the World of Outlaws.
But would you agree with me, Kirk, that eventually the High Limits Sprint Car Series is going to be more of a national touring series? Because now listen, they race out in California, they race in PA, and they race all over the Midwest. So I think that they're eventually going to be a direct competitor with the World of Outlaws.
Well, I think all indications point to that happening. Yeah, I would agree with that. Now, the High Limit Series did not have, they scheduled a non-points race for, I think, Tulare out in California that eventually didn't happen, but most of the High Limit races were from Lakeside Speedway, Eagle Raceway to the west on to the east. So it was not a full West Coast to East Coast touring series, a High Limit series.
But weren't they supposed to race at Tulare and Hanford?
They were, but Tulare, but that was not going to be a points race. It eventually got canceled.
Right.
So basically, the far western events were Lakeside and Eagle Raceway and Huset Speedway up in South Dakota. Most of the other races were to the east. So it was not a full west to east coast touring series like the World of Outlaws, and was much limited in the number of races, and they're all midweek shows. Now, the All-Star Series, also similar in geographics, they had a race at I-70 Speedway, I-70 Motorsports Park here earlier this season, about as far west as they go, Knoxville, and that was primarily in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan, where most of the All-Star races were.
Typically, the All-Stars run about 50, 55 races.
Yeah.
Do you look for that to ramp up a little bit? Do you think that with the high-limit sprint car series acquiring the All-Stars, do you look for that number to come up a little bit?
Maybe, but at this late date, scheduling for 2024, it's still going to be a challenge to change anything of what the All-Stars was in 2023. Now, eventually, where do they want to go with this? I think time will tell, but Flow Racing is the video provider for the High Limit Series.
Right.
Versus the Dirt Vision video platform that is owned by the World Racing Group that owns the World of Outlaws. World of Outlaws owns their own video company.
So
you've got a little bit of a competition going on. I say a little bit, a big competition going on between Dirt Vision and Flow.
Right.
And Flow has already a big presence in the dirt late model world with the Lucas Oil late model series. And I think they're wanting to ramp this thing up. Yeah, this is a big player. But at the same time, you know as well as I do, Scott, and not a lot's been talked about this, World of Outlaws is not going to take this line down.
They
will fight back.
I guarantee it, they're not going to be sleeping on their hands right now.
No.
No chance about it. But and to be fair, who do you think is more prominent when you talk about sprint car racing? The World of Outlaws is the big deal, right?
No doubt about it. They've been in existence since 1978. They've been the brand name for the high-level 410 wing sprint car racing for 45 years. And that's not going to go away anytime soon. And just because Kyle Larson and Brad Sweet come in, backed up by a lot of money from Flow and other entities, doesn't mean they're going to take down the World of Outlaws overnight. I think just the opposite. World of Outlaws have been challenged before. We remember, what, about 15 years ago, National Sprint Car League.
Let's be fair.
Took them on.
The All-Stars always talk about they are the original 410 sprint car series.
Yeah.
Blake always says that when he does his lineup, that we're the original 410 sprint car series, and they started in 1970, and I just can't see him overtaking the World of Outlaws. Do you? Do you see
that?
No,
but they're going to try. They're going to try.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
And here's the big challenge that we have with a player coming in to challenge the supremacy of the World of Outlaws. There's only so many full-time 410 wing sprint car teams that have the capability of traveling 90 dates a year across the country and making that work. Now, dirt late model racing is able to, you know, support two full series like the World of Outlaws and the Lucas Oil late model series, but that's not a West Coast, East Coast proposition. The dirt late models don't travel to the West Coast. The World of Outlaws and the Lucas Oil late model series are about half the country from the Midwest to the East Coast.
You're talking about
Lucas Oil late models and World of Outlaws. They're not full West Coast to East Coast touring series like the World of Outlaws sprint cars.
Well, they do run up and down the West Coast, Kurt. They go to Tulare, they go to Hanford.
No. I'm talking about late models.
Late models.
Oh. The two national late model series do not go past this part of the country.
Mm-hmm.
So they're better able to support two full series of full-time racers in those two series and get along just fine. They pay a lot of money, and I think this is where Brad Sweet and Kyle Larson are taking a look at what the late models have done over the years and say, hey, you know, those guys have been paying a lot of money for a lot of years. Why can't we do that?
Right.
In sprint car racing.
So just to be clear, Brad Sweet is going to retire from the World of Outlaws after this year.
He's not made that announcement yet, but all indications are that once he is crowned his fifth straight championship, which it's not official yet, he's still got to run three nights of the World Finals this weekend, that once that championship is celebrated, that Brad Sweet will come off the full-time World of Outlaws Tour and focus in on this height.
Do you think that's a mistake for Brad Sweet? Because he's won five in a row, and me personally, I think that he could catch Donnie Schatz with 10 championships. Do you feel that way?
Well, he has made public statements that he's not looking to drive these sprint cars full-time on the World of Outlaws Tour till he's 50. He's got family that he'd like to spend more time with or other priorities in Brad Sweet's life that he would like to focus in on, and he looks to be very comfortable playing that promoter's role. He was out there with a headset on in those high limit series and looked like he was having a good time doing that. So I think I don't look for Brad Sweet to completely retire being a race car driver. I think he's still going to run races. I just think that the full-time World of Outlaws Tour is coming to an end for him, and he wants to spend more time as a race promoter. He's got interest, along with Kyle Larson and Kobe Copeland, in Silver Dollar Speedway out in California. So he's got that racetrack. He's got this high-limit series. I think he wants to focus more on that.
Chico.
He's promoter at Chico.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
So that's the big question.
So my thought is, Kirk, is that eventually the high limit sprint car series is going to be a coast to coast series. Do you believe that?
I think eventually, yeah. Is that going to happen next year? I don't see how it could. What I think is going to happen is that what I think is going to happen is that they're going to carry on the All-Star Series pretty much as it's been for a while. And they're going to use that to help build up their midweek high limit series. So I don't think all of these things are just going to happen overnight. But is the long-range plan for Brad Sweet and Kyle Larson to be at the top of sprint car racing? Yeah, I do. But at the same time, just like I said before, World of Outlaws people aren't going to take this lying down.
I'm wondering how much Flo is going to be involved in this, personally.
A lot. I think Flo is involved a lot.
I think Flo is going to be throwing some money at this.
Absolutely.
Thing. Do you believe that?
Because that's going to be a big property for them. They are already involved heavily in dirt late model racing, and their involvement in sprint car racing has been the All-Star Series as well as the High Limit Series. I think they're wanting to grow that.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't they?
Yeah. No.
This is a different world we live in now from the times that the World of Outlaws have been challenged before. You got these streaming properties that raise a lot of revenue. And World of Outlaws makes a lot of money off Dirt Vision because they own all their own series. They don't have to pay sanctioning fees to the tracks or the series that they own.
Let's be fair. I think that the World of Outlaws will remain king of sprint car racing for a long, long time. I don't believe that the high limit sprint car series is going to overtake the World of Outlaws. Do you believe that? Because, to be fair, every race that you go to that's a World of Outlaw race, the grandstands are packed. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Like out at Lakeside. The grandstands were completely packed that night, weren't they?
And they were also filled up for the high limit race back in April, as you recall.
Yeah.
They had a big crowd for that night, too.
Well, the draw for people that want to watch the High Limit Series is that Kyle Larson races in it, right? Do you agree with that? The big draw is to come out and watch Kyle Larson race the sprint car.
The big battle is going to be drive for which drivers are going to be loyal to which series. And that's all going to be based on how much money each of these series is going to be able to throw out there to keep these guys traveling with whatever series full time.
Do you feel like John Lee just mentioned here on the chat room, he says, will Donnie Schatz jump over? Do you think Donnie Schatz will go over there and do that?
Well, the big question I have, and we just had him on a week ago when, you know, we brought up Tony Stewart's name about, hey, what do you think about Tony Stewart and his wife and funny car team winning at the Motorplex? And Donnie Schatz said, I haven't talked to Tony much lately.
Right.
Which leads me to wonder, how much longer is Donnie Schatz going to be driving a sprint car for Tony Stewart? What do you think?
I think that Donnie's getting up there in the age and that he's just about ready to give it up. How about you? Do you believe that?
Well, I'm looking more at is Tony Stewart that clued in to what Donnie Schatz
hold
is
on.
Doing with the with the sprint car that to the point that Donnie Schatz said, I don't talk to Tony that much.
Hey, do you think that Tony Stewart will allow Donnie Schatz to go run the High Limit Series? He's been a loyal supporter of the World of Outlaws for so many years, all the way back to the Danny Lasassi days.
But he just sold his All-Star Series to the rival of the World of Outlaws, the High Limit Series.
Mm-hmm.
We'll ask Jeremy Elliott. He talked to Tony Stewart this past week and apparently made some interesting comments to Jeremy Elliott. We'll get what he says that Tony Stewart told him about selling the High Limit Series and what may lie in the future in his racing endeavors. Right now, Tony Stewart is pretty heavily involved in the drag racing world. He still owns Eldora Speedway, but you kind of wonder how much more investments is Tony Stewart going to divest himself from as he focuses in more on the drag racing world.
Yeah. Kirk, the 7th annual Grant Youngins Memorial was canceled out at Lakeside Speedway
Sad.
This weekend.
Yeah, too bad we didn't have that last weekend, right?
Yeah.
What a perfect weekend last weekend would have been for the USMTS at Lakeside on Friday night and tonight's event at Lucas Oil Speedway for the MLRA, also canceled due to this nasty weather that's come in. So it's just a shame we didn't have these events a week ago.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Yeah, it's they're not going to reschedule the Grant Youngins Memorial race for this year.
They canceled 81 as well, didn't
right.
they?
That was supposed to be the final points race, but they've already crowned a champion. Rodney Sanders wins his 5th championship in the USMTS. So now they look forward to the USMTS and USRA banquet that'll be held in late January at the Harris Casino here in Kansas City.
Yeah. So, and the MLRA that was supposed to race down there this weekend at Lucas Oil Speedway yeah. was canceled as well.
Yeah, right? They were supposed to pay $10,000 to win tonight down there. I think it was going to draw some guys down there tonight. I know a lot of the big late model guys are going to be down at East Alabama Motor Speedway this weekend for a $49,000 to win race down there. But I think this event, had they had it at Wheatland, would have drawn some pretty good runners. And speaking of, what a race we saw Sunday night out at Eldora Speedway.
Yeah, no doubt.
How about that?
Yeah.
Big win for Brandon Shepard, his 5th Dirt Track World Championship victory, $100,000. And Hudson O'Neill almost pulled off the victory after Brandon Shepard ran out of gas right at the checkered flag, fell a car length short, or Hudson O'Neill would have walked away with not only the Lucas Oil Championship that paid $200,000, but another $100,000 for winning the Dirt Track World Championship. But still a big night for Hudson O'Neill as he steals that championship. Looked like Jonathan Davenport was going to be the guy as the top four in the Lucas Oil Late Model Series points battled it out for the championship. Ricky Thornton Jr. fell out early after running into Jimmy Owens there with 7 laps into the race and knocked him out of the race. So the battle was down to Jonathan Davenport, Devin Moran, and Hudson O'Neill. And how about that back and forth between Devin Moran and Hudson O'Neill? Get that,
that
championship. Those guys were really duking it out there behind the leader, Brandon Shepard. So a rough racetrack. They got a lot of rain out at Eldora Speedway last weekend, and it met for a pretty wild race. And I think, what, only six cars finished the race?
Right. It was a rugged racetrack, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That thing was pretty rugged. Rough.
Character. Whether they used the word character, it had character.
Character in it.
So,
but when people say character, that means rough.
Yeah.
A track
that's
means,
just a nice word for rough race.
Right, that's it.
But there's not much they could have done about that. As much rain as they got, I thought the track prep guys did about as good a job as they could do to stage that event. The rain just wouldn't let up for 3 days out there, and it's amazing they even got the event in.
Yep, no doubt about it. All right, well, we're going to take a break. And Track Talk is brought to you by Rod End Supply, featuring the Power Eye Midwest Lightning Sprints. And we can't thank you enough for tuning into the show today. Can't thank everybody. But when are we going to have Jeremy Elliott on?
He'll be on the third segment of this hour. And so he'll be live with us from Pennsylvania. So we'll talk more about the big changes going on in the world of wing sprint car racing. But we've got an interview that we did with Ben Shelton, who's the pit reporter for the Dirt Track World Championship in the Lucas Oil Late Model Series. We did that on Monday on Mostly Motorsports. We talk about the...
We're going to play that next.
We'll play that next. We'll talk more about the Dirt Track World Championship dramatic win by Brandon Shepard and the championship by Hudson O'Neill. We'll get into that more here in the next segment.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, more here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's all called Track Talk. It's all brought to you by Rod End Supply, featuring the Power Eye Midwest Lightning Sprints. For Todd Surprise, for Kirk Elliott, I'm Scott Traylor. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Welcome back. It's Track Talk. It's all brought to you by Rod End Supply, featuring the Power Eye Midwest Lightning Sprints. We had a chance to talk to Ben Shelton, who was one of the pit reporters for the Dirt Track World Championships. And Ben Shelton is about as good as they get, isn't he?
He does a great job, as well as James Essex and Dustin Jarrett. Between all three of those guys, it doesn't get any better than that for dirt late model fans. Those guys are really passionate about the sport. They've been around it a long time. Ben Shelton's been doing races a long time. He looks young. He looks like a young guy, but he's been around a long time.
In fact, we give him his start in the business, didn't we, Kirk?
Well, yeah. He had been working even a long time before that. He was like the voice of the Show Me 100 down at West Plains Motor Speedway for a number of years, even before he started working with us.
Right.
So.
And the Short Track Nationals as well.
So he's been around a long time, and he is the, as you mentioned, the pit reporter. And he had a busy night on Sunday night because there's a lot of things going on in the pits at Eldora Speedway. And here's a portion of the conversation we had the day after the Dirt Track World Championship with Ben Shelton.
Kirk and I were just talking about that race last night. Man, that was... A race that was full of drama, wasn't it?
Well, it was, and I mean, I think you knew as wet as the track was, and then the circumstances of the first leg of the championship. I think we all thought there'd be a lot of storylines and drama, but I think we lowballed it. I don't think we had any. We didn't have a real idea because once it all started happening, you were like, "Man!" And then the way it ended, I mean, if you saw that in a movie, you'd probably say, "Well, that would never happen. That's not real."
Right.
But it did.
Right. Right.
It was unreal.
Eight different leaders last night. Is that a record for a race? Eight different leaders?
It's got, you know, I hate to say something without 1,000,000% knowing accuracy, but, man, if it's not, it's got to be really close, right?
Right, I mean, no doubt about it.
Spectacular. You know, and there was a couple other guys that were in contention to lead. I mean, in the blink of an eye, we could have had 10. And don't get me wrong, that part of that was a product. The track was demanding. Attrition was high. I mean, we had, you know, a few leaders get KO'd there, but... But still, 8 leaders and 100-lapper in 2023, I'll take that any day of the week.
But and listen, what I was looking at when I saw Brandon Shepard, he was running that B5 car, and did it look like to you at the racetrack that he was up there in the muck? Wasn't he up there in the muck a little bit?
Well, I think him and, you know, and before Bobby Pierce ran out of gas, you know, I think those Illinois Bullring guys, myself and our expert on the staff, the racer expert, Randy Weaver, you know, we made the comment, that's a big racetrack, but it raced like a Bullring because it was so aggressive and it was such a big cushion. And, you know, guy, you know, you saw Tyler Carpenter go to the lead and he ended up, you know, losing power steering, which is the last thing you want anywhere, especially on a aggressive track like that. But, you know, Tyler races on the Bullrings in the Ohio Valley. And then, you know, Bobby Pierce and Brandon Shepard, don't get me wrong, they're good everywhere. But they cut their teeth running, you know, four wheels in the fluff, if you will, back there in Illinois on those tiny Bullrings. And
yeah.
It wasn't a big deal for those guys. And it really, they showed their muscle. And Brandon's going to win a lot of races in that Longhorn House Card next year. That was a taste of what's to come. And, you know, it was a big night for him.
Ricky Thornton Jr. and Jimmy Owens got together. And that kind of put Ricky Thornton down about six laps, didn't it?
It did. I mean, Anthony Burrows, his crew chief, they were prepared for anything, and they were prepared for it. Unfortunately, as prepared as you can be, it was still a lot of repairs, and they needed one more caution to come out. It didn't, and so they fell down a lot of laps. And, I mean, to me, that's the only damper of the night. You know, we talked about it on your show there on Friday or Saturday. All my days run together. It was Saturday.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, and we talked about it was going to be a little bit of a travesty if he didn't win because he had such a dominant year. But at the same token, you know, he said all along, we all signed up for this. But, man, you really wanted to see him in the thick of things when, you know, when that final checker flag flew. You wanted to see at least have a chance.
Yep, no doubt.
Yeah, it's too bad, Ben, that we don't see the same things like we saw in sprint car racing on Saturday night when they were able to change a whole front end assembly on these sprint cars like 2 minutes. You can't do that on these late models.
No, there's, you know, Donnie Shodds told me one time, he said, I enjoy racing late models because, he goes, it's stress relief. And I said, what do you mean? And he goes, well, he goes, on a sprint car, we basically have like three adjustments. He goes, on a late model, you have like 20, and you got all these different parts, and they all affect each other. And I said, Donnie, that sounds really stressful. And he goes, yeah, but for me, it's kind of fun. Well, same deal on a late model. You know, on a sprint car, you knock that front end out, and you got a drag link, and, you know, some torsion tubes and a few things, and, you know, some connecting rods, and you get that front end back there on a late model. It's, you know, if you took it to your local body shop, you might be able to pick it up 4 days from now. There's just a lot of parts.
Right.
And they tried. They did their best, but they just couldn't get it back out there.
You know what really impresses me about the 20 RT team and Ricky Thornton Jr.? They didn't give up. They kept working at it, and even though they were six laps down, they came out and hammered it right on home. A lot of guys would have just parked it and said the heck with it, but they did not.
Well,
they just didn't give up.
Well, the way the racetrack raced, Kirk, we were kind of joking that he still might be the champion because the other three might not finish. And
that's right.
Hold, you know, Davenport ends up not finishing. You know, and the other two did, but with Ricky staying out there and the point that Davenport fell out, that was a $25,000 difference. That was difference in, was it the $200,000 title? No. You know, but it was a, you know, instead of getting $100,000, it was a $125,000 that he got for third. So it did pay dividends in that sense. You know, it was still a heartbreaker, not for the title, but
Right. Perseverance
pays off, boys and girls.
Hey, so listen, did you feel like Bobby Pierce had a chance to win that race there at the end before he?
I think it was Bobby. Before he ran out of gas, Scott, I think it was his race to lose.
Right.
I really do.
Well, let's talk about the battle amongst those championship contenders. Jonathan Davenport looked like he had things pretty well in hand. What'd they say, a mud clod hit the radiator? What happened to him?
I didn't get to talk to them. I can tell you when they came by, and you know, again, I'm the furthest thing from I always joke as a civil engineer, not a mechanical. I know when he came by and when it shut down, a spark kind of shot out the side of the engine there, and that's usually not a good sign, right? So I guess I assumed a failure of some sort of the power plant, but with those mud clods, anything's possible. But I do know when it laid down, it shot a spark out the side right at the start finish line in front of me.
And then the battle between Hudson O'Neill and Devin Moran, those two guys were really going at it down towards the end. Talk about that battle.
It was spectacular. Again, it was something out of a movie. I mean, you got Brandon Shepard leading. He runs out of fuel 40 feet before the line. He's able to just cross the, you know, coast across and get it. And then, you know, Hudson goes down a lap. And, you know, again, Hudson goes down a lap. And what was crazy about that guy is when he got the lucky dog to get back on the lead lap, he wasn't the first car down a lap. But the car in front of him – had already got the lucky dog once. The first car down a lap had already got it. Well, by Lucas Oil rules, you can only get it once.
Right.
So because of that, Hudson got it. If not for that technicality, Hudson's not even in the fray.
Wow.
You know, because he had two flats. And, you know, I think what really won it, honestly, those flats very well may have won that race for him, because not only did he have a fresh right front and right rear tire on, but the last time he came in, Mark Richards, team owner, you know, Mark's no dummy. He knew fuel was going to be an issue. They added fuel. So he had more fuel and fresher tires than anybody. So, again, it was better than any afternoon soap opera you'll ever see, all the twists and turns. And heartbreaker for Devin Moran. I mean, he almost got his first Lucas Oil title, first year with Double Down Motorsports, and I just came up a little bit short, but it was exciting. You know what? You hate to see a race of seven cars finish.
You know,
it was exciting.
I think the smartest thing they did, because they were conscious about how much fuel they were going to run, and they were dumping some fuel in there while they were changing the tire. And that was an excellent move right there, wasn't it?
And they were the only one, you know. And,
right.
And talking to Mark Richards before, they actually changed fuel cells for that event. He said, we may have actually had enough because we put one in when we thought we'd have a little bit more capacity. That was the way I understood it. They were so concerned because it was so cool and they knew it would be so fast. And sure enough, you know, Owens runs out of gas. Pierce runs out of gas, and then Shepherd runs out of gas, but just enough to coast across for the win.
Hey, do they ever do open reds where they allow the drivers and the team members to come out and put gas into the late models? Do they ever do that, like in sprint car racing?
So they do sometimes, to answer that, and it's fuel only or tear-offs only. That's pretty much the only thing I've ever seen. I've seen tear-off helmets or fuel, and basically, they had talked about that. Series director Rick Schwally told me yesterday afternoon, we're going to monitor it, and if we think we need to, we may have a fuel stop. And, you know, the fact that some guys made it and some didn't, you know, probably warranted they didn't need it. But, these different motors, these wide bores, man, I always joke they got those big double barrel curly straws, and they just suck right. The fuel out of that tank like it's nothing. So it was on their radar. In fact, Knoxville, that's one reason the Knoxville Late Model Nationals is now 80 laps.
Right.
Because at 100, they had to do fuel stops there because everybody started running out of gas there in the last 10 laps.
Was there any conversation over the radio yesterday where they were talking about maybe having a fuel stop and letting allow the teams to put some fuel into the cars?
To my knowledge, no. They as well as I do, Scott, if you have conversations, if you mention on the receiver, you better do it. So,
yeah, right.
I think that, you know, and again, you know, Owens and Pierce were the only two other than Shepherd coming to the checkers that ran out of fuel. So it's a really tough situation to be in if you're the series director, because you don't want to potentially have an open red that changes the outcome of the race if you don't have to, right? So,
right.
It was quite the night. It was quite the weekend. I felt like I was at Eldora for 87 days.
Right.
It paid off on a thrilling finish.
There you have it. Ben Shelton, one of the pit reporters for the Dirt Track World Championships. And, man, that was a hell of a race, wasn't it, Kurt?
It was a fantastic Sunday night. After I got done watching the Chiefs win, tuned in, they had the four wide going on. Great timing.
Perfect time.
To watch that on Sunday night after the Chiefs win, that was incredible Sunday. Other big winners this weekend, Christopher Bell wins the Cup race at Homestead, gets into the Final Four, joins Kyle Larson in the hunt. And I know Max Verstappen won the F1 race. Who cares?
Right.
The big win, though, you were at Devil's Bowl Speedway. How about David Gravel's win? Stole that win from James McFadden, the final winner ever at Devil's Bowl Speedway.
Man, when I left Devil's Bowl last weekend, it kind of brought a tear to my eye, to be honest with you. You know,
that had a lot of dramatics that night.
Hey, there too. Listen, for us doing the pay-per-view broadcast that we did forever, we were down there every spring, every summer, and every fall. Three times a year we went to Devil's Bowl Speedway. And so that place is I'm a little bit attached to it, right? Because we never went to any other racetracks three times a year. That was the only racetrack that we went to three times a year. And that was because of Lanny Edwards and Lanny Ross and Beverly.
So it was tough driving out of there, wasn't it?
It was. And let me tell you something. That was the biggest crowd I've ever seen at Devil's Bowl. Those grandstands were completely packed. And I'm just thankful that who promoted that race? SLS?
No, I think that was a joint effort, Devil's Bowl and World Outlaws, I think.
No, I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think so.
Mm-mm. Anyway, it was a big night of racing at Devil's Bowl Speedway. A lot of drama there, too, when Brad Sweet and Casey Kane, his boss, got tied
together
up with one another, and Sweet's car looked virtually destroyed in an open red where, by the way, they only had one tow truck down there. He had time to get that car fixed, back out, and still finish seventh.
Let me tell you something about that sequence of events. So Tim Crawley wanted to get in there and help get the car back together, but there was an official there that told him to get back away from that car. Do not help them with that race car. And you know what's so funny is that a lot of the teams jump in there and help the other teams, right? They jump in there. They had to replace the front axle, the nose wing, and the top wing on that car. And they did it in a really responsible amount of time.
They were lucky they only had one tow truck down there to give them extra time to get that track cleaned up for them to fix that car and get him back out on the racetrack. That, to me, was a championship moment.
Well,
got it out there and still finished seventh.
The reason they had enough time is because they had a lot of carnage out on the front straightaway.
Yeah.
And it gave them a little extra time to get that front axle in, to get that nose wing on, and get that top wing on. And then,
amazing they were able to get that car fixed to come back out.
It was crazy. Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Jeremy Elliott from Sprint Car Unlimited is going to join us here on the show. And we're going to talk a little bit about sprint car racing out on the East Coast and his thoughts about High Limit Sprint Car Series acquires the All-Star Circuit of Champions. We're going to do that and more right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's all brought to you by Rod End Supply, featuring the Power Eye Midwest Lightning Sprints. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Track Talk. Here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, want to thank all the people that are listening around the country right now on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And joining us now is from Sprint Car Unlimited, Jeremy Elliott joins us now. How are you doing, Jeremy?
I'm doing okay, not too bad. Thanks for having me on.
Man, you are the pulse of what's going on out there in PA, man. So we wanted to get you on. And you know, Kirk and I have been debating all morning about will the High Limit Sprint Car Series try to overtake the World of Outlaws? What is your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I don't – first off, I mean, I know that's a popular thought that that's going to happen. I think that there is – first of all, I think there's room for both. I think High Limit is still – behind if there is such a battle, because they're new. They have some things they still got to work out. I mean, it's not like they're going to come in and take all the World of Outlaw drivers, all the dates, and just run away and hide. I don't think that that's the case. So I think it's going to take a couple years, and I think Brad knows this. I think Kyle knows this, and I think the people they put in place know this. It's going to take a couple years to get things right. I mean,
right.
It's like anything. The World of Outlaws has spent years honing their craft, so to speak, through Ted Johnson, Boundless, and then obviously Carter and the World Racing Group. So I think next year is going to be a learning year or another learning year.
Right.
And I think the Outlaws are going to clip along.
Yeah. Do you think at some point during the existence of the High Limit Sprint Car Series that they'll be going from the West Coast to the East Coast? Do you believe that that's going to happen at some point?
I do. I mean, if it's a national series, I think you're going to see them on both coasts. And I think the same with the World of Outlaws. I know there's a lot of hot rumors that the Outlaws aren't going out west. My sources tell me they are. They're still looking at going out to California and the West Coast. There's tracks out there now. I don't know how long all those tracks will be there. There's a lot of fairgrounds out there, which is never a safe haven for race fans because, I mean, they change boards and then they, you know, obviously come and go, and especially if attendance, and there's a lot of urban sprawl out there, so, you know, we could see some tracks go away out there. I've heard some rumors about that. But, yeah, both series are going to probably go coast to coast.
You know, it's sad to see a track like I-80, I-30, and Devil's Bowl go away. Those are painful tracks to watch just disappear off the map.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it is right now. There's just a premium on land that tracks sit on. I mean, places like Copart, they're salvage yards, and they're, you know, racetracks are wide open. They have the infrastructure for it. It doesn't take much to clear off the land or put things up. So I think right now, and oh, by the way, and let's face it, the market's tough as far as racetracks. You have streaming now. You have
right. So
many different forms of entertainment, things that can take away from people going to the racetrack. Attention spans are a lot shorter, and I think dirt track racing needs to change its model a little bit. I think that's one thing, speaking of high limit, that Brad and Kyle and all the people there, I think that's one thing they're forward thinking on, is that this sport needs a change with how it does stuff. Dirt track racing, the model and the promotional end of it, it's very 20 years ago.
Right.
And we can't have that anymore if tracks are going to survive.
Let me ask you this. If here in the Midwest, I feel like weekly racing is struggling here in the Midwest. I know that's not the case out there in PA because a lot of fans love sprint cars out there in PA. But do you see some other tracks struggling to carry on with a weekly racing series out there?
I think it struggles in central PA. I think weekly racing even struggles here now because kind of what's happened is it's great that they're upping purses. You know, that's great for the drivers and teams and
right. Probably
long overdue. But the problem is when you do that, you have almost, I hate to say it, too many big shows. And then when you have that, those prices are higher. So what fans do is we become like tennis and golf and they go to the majors. They go to, like out here, Tuscarora 50. That whole month of September are bigger races. And then you have the Outlaws here three times. And then you had the All-Stars here a couple times. And then you had races in between like the Dream, Living Legends Dream Race at Port Royal, the Dirt Classic. And then you have Speed Week. And then people from Pennsylvania, because it's the biggest area for sprint car racing, they'll travel to the Kings Royal, travel to the Knoxville Nationals. You'll see it a lot at Charlotte this next week. So there's only so much money. And we have 118 races here. So that's too many, first off.
Right.
And I think if what's going to go is the weekly show, and I think it's probably the same in the Midwest. I mean, there's more shows going, you know, popping up out there as far as big shows with high limit and whatnot. So I just think that the fans are being choosy. They can stay home to watch the weekly show, the regular point show, however you want to call it. They can stay home and watch that cheaper, save their money, and go to the bigger shows.
Jeremy, this Kirk, you were able to talk with Tony Stewart the other day, sold the All-Star Series he'd had since 2015. Why did he sell the series, and what do you think's going to happen with this series in the immediate future?
Well, I think for Tony, it was a couple things. He's really busy. He has a lot on his plate. Right. And I think, you know, when you're dealing with the NHRA, the NASCAR stuff, those are huge commitments. I mean, for his time. I think, you know, he's in a new marriage, you know, relatively new. I think, you know, he still has Eldora, still has a sprint car team with Donnie Schatz. And I think when the opportunity came up for Brad and Kyle, who kind of have a different vision maybe than other people, it was the perfect time for him to kind of pass that torch. At least that's what he talked a lot about, passing the torch to two guys who, you know, would take it over and kind of have the same passion he did when he bought the All-Stars. As for what high limit I think is going to be, again, I think it's going to be a learning curve initially. I do believe they'll probably hire Mike Hess. I wouldn't see why they wouldn't. And I think they're going to do some putting people in place. I think they're going to build their infrastructure because that's something they didn't have. I think that's going to take a year or two to do, and I think they're just going to work on their product. I think they know that they still have a long way to go. And I think Brad Sweet's smart enough to put the right things in place.
So you think the name All-Star Series, that's just going to go away?
I don't know how they can keep it at this point. I mean, but who knows? I know they're still brainstorming at High Limit and with their streaming partner Flow. So we'll see. I mean, I can't say for sure that the All-Star name will go away. It would be a shame if it does, but, you know, one constant in life is change. And, you know, I do think sprint car racing in general needs some change. I just don't know if it's all good.
Hey, Jeremy, tell everybody about your website, Sprint Car Unlimited, and how they can join your website.
Well, it's sprintcarunlimited.com. It's a new site. It's very much like Dirt on Dirt on the late model side. It's $35 for a year, and we cover sprint car racing coast to coast. I have a guy who covers that side of it. We're working on some things out there. Obviously, I cover it everywhere else. A lot of breaking news, a lot of stories. We have a weekly podcast, probably about 650 posts a year. So equals out to more than once a day. So we feel it's worth it. And then, you know, we also have our TV side, which is a straight pay-per-view side. Like, we have a pay-per-view on the 11th. That's at SprintCarUnlimited.tv. It's a separate site, same company. So just a lot of irons in the fire, and we're looking to start some stuff on YouTube as well.
Jeremy, we can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us here on Track Talk, and we hope to have you on Mostly Motorsports on Mondays as well. We can't wait to talk to you again down the road.
Give me a call anytime. It's an honor to be on the show. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Jeremy. There you have it, Jeremy Elliott, SprintCarUnlimited.com.
Good guy.
Good.
No relation, by the way.
Good website, though.
Yeah.
Really good website.
Yeah, he does great work out there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right. So we're just about ready to wrap up the show. Don't forget, hour number two, exclusively on our Facebook page, Twitter, and RacingBoys.com as well. So we hope that you'll join us over there. We got a lot of people checking in right now. We got 37 people listening to the broadcast, and we hope that you will join us in hour number two.
You're going to Phoenix next weekend?
I'm thinking about going to Phoenix next weekend.
Cool.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, thanks for everybody. For Todd Surprise, for Kirk Elliott, I'm Scott Traylor saying thanks for joining us, and everybody back there at Sports Radio 810 WHB as well. So we can't thank you enough for joining the show. We'll see you hour number two on our Facebook page, Twitter, and RacingBoys.com. We'll see you next week right here on Track Talk.